Now to a very disturbing civil war in Uganda amongst the world's largest known group of wild chimpanzees. The conflict was described in a piece in the journal Science in April, and it's based on a research paper that's been described in the Scientific American as a tour de force. The lead author of that research paper is Aaron Sandell, co-director of the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project, and I'm very pleased to say that Aaron joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
Firstly, I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project and how long it's been going.
Yeah, it's a long-term research project on wild chimpanzees. People started this project in continuous observation on the chimpanzees there in 1995. So it's over 30 years of continuous observations by two senior professors and a team of Ugandan research staff that I got plugged into in 2012 as a graduate student. And I've continued working there ever since.
So if we go back to when you started working on the project, could you describe what the chimpanzee population was like then and maybe a little bit about the habitat that they live in?
Yeah, the Ngogo chimpanzees, they were the largest group of wild chimpanzees known to scientists. There were almost always around 150 individuals. When I started, there were around 180 chimps total. This is like three times the size of other chimpanzee groups. Part of the reason they were so big is they're in the middle of this well-protected national park, this big forest in Uganda, Kibali National Park. The Ngogo chimpanzees were in the middle of the northern sector of this park, surrounded on all sides by more forests, surrounded on all sides by other chimpanzee groups. So there was a lot of food for these chimps, which probably explained why there could be so many there.
And again, before you started observing what's been described as the civil war, I wonder if you could give us a sense of the sorts of interactions that you and your colleagues have with the chimpanzees and what that means for, if you like, your relationship with either individuals or the group.
Yeah, well, we're going out looking for these chimps and trying to find them and then follow them all day, recording what they do and who they're interacting with. One important thing to note with chimpanzees, their social lives are pretty similar to that of our own. They're not like many other primates, like monkeys or even other apes, where when you have a group, they're pretty much in many species of group living animals, they're at least within eyesight or earshot of each other all the time. And they're moving around as a group. Chimpanzees are different. They're constantly splitting up into these temporary subgroups. They can travel alone. They can go join up with another individual, two, three individuals can go off together minute by minute. And we call this fission fusion. They're constantly splitting apart, joining back together, just like humans. This is partly why chimpanzees are so interesting, but it also means it's hard to find necessarily the chimps you're looking for. And then once you find a chimp, you follow them at a distance of around 7-10 meters. They know we're there, but they're just so used to people following them that they ignore us.
Mm. So you've described this natural pattern of fission and fusion, but I think it's fair to say that at some point you started noticing something a little bit different in the way the fission was happening. Could you describe what you observed in the early phases of what's now described as a civil war?
Well, always there were these distinct social clusters that seemed to exist that we could detect after watching for weeks and months. We saw that there were sort of three social clusters or neighborhoods, the eastern neighborhood, central neighborhood, and western neighborhood. And there was a day in 2015. I'd been in the forest for a year during this period of data collection for my PhD research. There was this one day I was with chimps from the western neighborhood, and we were in the middle of their territory. It was getting to the end of the day. The sun was starting to sort of get lower in the sky. And we heard other chimps, the chimps I was with heard these other chimps. We were in the middle of the territory, so it must have been chimps from their group, probably chimps from the central neighborhood. But they became quiet. They acted nervous. They started touching each other in reassurance. They were acting as if they were hearing outsiders, chimps from another group. And then when the other chimps approached, sure enough, it was chimps from the central neighborhood. But rather than reunite in this typical fission-fusion fashion of chimpanzees, the chimps from the western neighborhood ran and chimps from the central neighborhood chased them, and nothing like that had been observed before in the 20 years of research.
What happened next?
Well, over the next 6 weeks, they avoided each other, and this was also unprecedented, where typically the chimps, even though there were these distinct social clusters or neighborhoods, they were still intermingling throughout the day and over the course of weeks. Different combinations of chimps would come together, but they avoided each other for 6 weeks. They came back together, and on the surface, things sort of seemed to have returned to normal. But then over the next 2 years, they became more and more polarized until the Western neighborhood was essentially a separate group. By 2018, they'd essentially turned into a separate group, divided the territory more or less in half. And then that's when we started seeing this real aggressive behavior, territorial behavior. And then in January 2018, the first lethal attack.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Aaron Sandell, co-director of the Ingogo Chimpanzee Project, about this really shocking chimpanzee civil war. And you've got us to the point, Aaron, of things really hotting up, and they have become lethal attacks. What scale of violence has occurred between these now separate groups of chimpanzees?
That's a good question, and it's an important caveat to make, especially when in the news and media coverage about this, people talk about civil war.
You're not suggesting that this has been overstated and hyped in the media, I hope, Aaron.
Well, we're partly responsible for it, but that's because I think it's relevant for understanding civil wars in humans. They're similar processes. We're seeing one group divide in two. We're seeing former community members attacking and killing each other. So in that sense, it has certain important parallels to it, but it's not like when you say a civil war in humans, you expect almost these battle lines and these mass casualties. This is not what we're seeing in the chimps. There are these regular territorial conflicts, but it was like once a year, chimps from the Western group would attack and kill a chimp, an adult male or adolescent male from the central group. Things did escalate. In 2021, we saw the first lethal attack on an infant chimp from the central group. The Western chimps, for the first few years, would sort of leave the infants and just target adult and adolescent males from the central group. And there had been a lot of infants killed. So, I mean, it's still an unprecedented number of lethal attacks. I mean, it's in some sense similar to normal chimpanzee behavior where they have conflicts with chimps that are in these adjacent groups. What's different here is that they have sort of complete knowledge of each other's territories, and the Western group is really pushing their border. And so this means that chimps in the central group feel safe. They're like, oh, I'm in the middle of my territory, but they're not safe. The Western chimps can even push there. So there are these lethal attacks. We reported in the paper 7 attacks on adult or adolescent males from the central group. There have been more since. And we report over 15 attacks on infants, and there have also been more since.
Yes, and I'd noticed that the categorization of some of those deaths, some of them are sort of presumed, but others are listed as observed. That sounds like a pretty shocking thing to witness, Aaron. If you don't mind, could you describe some of the things that you've seen?
Yeah, it is. It's tough to see a lethal attack. I saw 2 against adult or adolescent males. These were the first 2 observed lethal attacks in this ongoing conflict. And the first attack, it was against a 16-year-old young adult male chimp named Errol. We give all the chimps names, partly just to help us keep track of them. But this is a chimp that I'd known really well. I'd watched him really grow up throughout my time from 2012 through 2015 during my dissertation research, then returning in 2017, 2018. I was seeing him from a 10-year-old to a 16-year-old. And he was killed by these chimps that I also know really well. And the way they attack, I mean, multiple chimps will surround, pile on the victim, hold him down. They're pounding with their fists, they're biting, they're kicking, they're slapping. And in the case of Errol, they had attacked him before I got there early in the morning. And this is where I don't know exactly what happened, because when I arrived, he had already been severely attacked and the chimps were feeding in a fig tree above him. But then he sat up and he was still alive. I think they'd left him for dead. And then they attacked him again. And this time he didn't get up and he died, you know, soon thereafter. It was tough. But in a way, the second lethal attack was more distinct. A year and a half later in 2019, I witnessed another lethal attack against a middle-aged male chimp called Basie. And Basie was a high-ranking male. He was in his 30s. He'd really grown up with chimps from the Western neighborhood. He was a central chimp, but some summers was more sort of connected with chimps from the Western neighborhood. And he really had spent years grooming with them and cooperating with them. So for them to kill him was really highlighting that we were seeing a shift in the relationships. Group identity, this new group identity, was overriding past relationships. And we're sort of really seeing this shift from friend to foe.
Yeah, that is really disturbing. But it also gives a sense of, yeah, the intimacy of the conflict and the radical change in the way these chimpanzees are dealing with each other. Aaron, is this the first time that humans have observed a so-called chimp civil war?
It's not the first time. It's the first time we're able to see it with really a lot of detail on the one hand and a lot of confidence about what we're seeing. But Jane Goodall's team in the 1970s saw something very similar. This was about 10 years into Jane Goodall's pioneering research on the chimpanzees at Gombe in Tanzania. And the chimps there, it was a smaller group, but they documented something remarkably similar, where the group sort of divided into these two factions, a northern and a southern faction, and chimps from the northern faction attacked and killed chimps from the southern faction, essentially killing all six adult males from the southern faction. And one adult female also was attacked and died from those attacks. So, I mean, it's the second time, and this is valuable for several reasons. One, it's not an anomaly, and we're able to start to look at certain patterns. At the time, it was hard to make sense of that earlier observation, earlier case by Jane Goodall, because everything about chimpanzees was new. People didn't know that they were capable of killing adults of their own species. I mean, they didn't even realize chimps were territorial at all. And they were only just realizing this sort of complicated dynamic form of social grouping that chimps formed, with this sort of community where they're constantly splitting up and rejoining throughout the day. So at the time, it was sort of clear that there were lethal attacks and territorial behavior, but there was a lot of doubt about, you know, what was going on and why. And part of the doubt also in that earlier case was Jane Goodall and her team, to sort of expedite the chimps getting used to people, were feeding them bananas. And this might have altered some of their behavior, could have increased aggression, it could have changed some of their sort of behaviors. At the time, it was sort of hotly debated to what extent did the bananas sort of drive this conflict. But at least in our case, this is really a case where there's minimal human impact. These are chimps that we know, they were part of this one group. They've never been fed by humans, and we're seeing this change.
The write-up of your research in the journal Science refers to it as highlighting the evolutionary roots of war and peace. What implications have you drawn from the observations you've made about this process of splitting and then patterns of lethal conflict between two new chimpanzee groups?
It's a good question. I mean, one important thing to remember is that chimpanzees, they're our closest living relative along with bonobos, and they can tell us a lot about human behavior, but they're not going to necessarily give us insight into what our last common ancestor was acting like. I mean, this is something that a lot of times people study chimps as anthropologists to try to make guesses about what our hominid ancestor, you know, 7 million years ago was doing. And that's a little outdated and overly simplistic way of thinking about how evolution works. Mm. But one of the values of chimpanzees is we can just see them as they are today and understand their behavior, and then start to try to understand the mechanisms driving their behavior, and then see to what extent does that apply to other species, including our own. And I think this is where this study and this case of lethal conflict in these chimps can inform certain aspects of human behavior. One important lesson that we can draw is the importance of maintaining relationships, maintaining friendships, and even maintaining your acquaintances. Because what I think drove the conflict with the chimps, there are several factors, and it's hard to pinpoint, you know, one cause. But a key theme and a key factor must have been the breakdown of some of these relationships. And instead of coming together, instead of reconciling in these moments of tension, there was avoidance. There was running away.
Yes. And was it also observed that the conflict became worse once members who had experience across both groups died?
Yeah, well, that's part of it. I mean, what caused the conditions that enabled this conflict to escalate, I think, was the death and disappearance of five adult males a year before the first real behavioral shifts that we observed in 2015. In 2014, five adult males and one adult female and her infant died. We're not sure the cause of their death. In at least two cases, the chimps had signs of some illness. So there might have been a small disease outbreak. But these five adult males dying, they were older males in their late 30s, early 40s. Chimps often, I mean, they'll die in their early 40s, old age, so to speak. But for five chimps to die so abruptly, this is 10% of the adult males in the group. And it likely removed a lot of the important connections among the neighborhoods. So now the neighborhoods are more distinct. And that's emphasizing the importance of, it's fine if you have sort of neighborhoods and cliques. What's important, though, is that you can have strong connections among them. And then what I think also caused added tension was, as these neighborhoods were more distinct, we saw a change in the dominance hierarchy. A new male rose and eventually in 2015 established himself as the alpha. He got the old alpha to grunt in submission. This increased sort of tension, aggression. And I think it was that increased tension that sort of corresponded with this period where the neighborhoods were really distinct, where avoidance of the alpha and avoidance of the deposed alpha for fear of, you know, getting beat up by them, that had a ripple effect where it wasn't just about one chimp avoiding another chimp. It was that now you had these cliques sort of following along, and that creates tension. I think with chimpanzees, because of their fission-fusion dynamics, they're always coming together. They're always splitting apart. Whenever they come back together, whenever they reunite, there's always a risk. As they reestablish sort of where they fall in the dominance hierarchy, there's chasing and they're screaming, they're slapping, there can be aggression. And I think it was like the chimpanzees in this heightened moment of tension with the change in the alpha, the risk was too high. So they sort of avoided each other, avoided the tension, avoided that risk, which makes sense, but they planted the seeds of polarization. They ran instead of reunited. You act like a stranger, you become a stranger.
We're speaking with Aaron Sandell, co-director of the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project. And Aaron, it is interesting, just even hearing you describe what you observed, it does sound so resonant with situations that you can think of involving humans, and in particular, the way that conflict can become sort of ingrained and endemic. Is this civil war, this pattern of conflict, now a permanent part of the relations between these two new groups?
Well, now they're clearly distinct groups and they're engaged in this ongoing conflict. I mean, chimpanzees are always hostile to other groups of chimps. And so in sort of a normal setting, there's going to be chimp groups and they divide the forest into their own. Each group has their own territory and there will be conflicts at those territorial borders. So before this conflict between these two groups at Ngogo, the Ngogo chimpanzees were really successful at actually expanding their territory, at attacking, killing chimps from other groups, partly because there were so many adult males and they were able to overpower chimps from other groups. There was also, I think, to some extent, even a culture of territorial patrols and a culture of coordinated aggression, facilitated by these social bonds within the group. So now, I mean, it's clearly these two groups that are in this territorial conflict. The Western chimpanzee group is the real, you know, winner. They're the one pushing further and further east. they've been responsible for all the lethal attacks. So it's this on it's this ongoing conflict, but it's turning more or less into what you might see among just adjacent chimpanzee groups. The sort of dramatic irony for us, though, is that we know that these are chimps, that they know each other. They're not strangers.
Is that what happened in the conflict or civil war that Jane Goodall observed as well?
It was a little different with that conflict, partly because the groups were smaller. And in that case, the northern group attacked and killed all of the adults, it seems, from the southern group. And then they took over that entire territory that they had temporarily lost when the southern faction split off. And that actually weakened their position. They started to get squeezed by the other chimpanzee groups that were adjacent to them. But then due to demographic changes, more adolescents grew up into adults. They were able to then defend their territory, and they've sort of been this group that Jane Goodall's team continues studying to this day. And I mean, that's one of our questions, why it's so important that we keep studying the chimps at Ngogo. We've been really lucky in that Kibali National Park is this well-protected national park. The Ngogo chimpanzees are in the middle of the forest in this place that's never been logged. It's been protected as a nature reserve for essentially over a century, even before it was a national park. And with the ongoing protection by the Uganda Wildlife Authority, we're able just to witness what's happening in these chimpanzees' lives. And we're relying on 30 years of data. And I think what we really need is another 30 more years of observation to see what's going to happen.
And from what you've said, is it your hypothesis that it's the size of the less dominant new group, which at least so far is preventing it from being extinguished, as happened in the conflict that Jane Goodall observed?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. When the Ngogo chimpanzees split into the Western group and the Central group, the Western group was a lot smaller. And they only had 7 adult males at first and 3 adolescent males, compared to over 25 in the Central group. And so even though the Western group has made all these lethal attacks on chimps from the Central group, there's still many more chimps in the Central group that survived to this day, and that's protected them from being exterminated, like the case at Gombe in the 1970s. And the question is, will the Central chimpanzees organize and start really defending their territory, or will the Western chimps perhaps sort of say, okay, this border is a good one, we'll leave it at that, and we'll just sort of divide the territory as it is? Or will they keep pushing further and further east, engaging in this conflict? These are all the questions, and this is, again, why we need another 30 years, probably, of observations.
So there are 2 known examples of these sorts of conflicts. One ended in a group being eradicated. This conflict now seems to be ongoing. Is there any way of ending a chimp civil war, Aaron?
It's a good question, and for chimpanzees, is there any possibility of these two groups coming back together? Everything I know about chimpanzees, I mean, I suggest that there isn't. There's no way that really at this point they could come back together. I feel like in the early months or even years of the conflict, there might have been a possibility. Like, I think part of the tension was that this new alpha male, Jackson, was causing a lot of the tension and avoidance. Maybe if he had been killed, they could have come back together. But at a certain point, when these group identities really formed and they're overriding their past relationships, I think it sort of isn't possible. And, you know, with animal behavior, we really try as scientists to just observe what's happening and not really do any interventions. But this is an interesting case, because if we could do an intervention, this would benefit the chimps, but in a deeper way, it would be really beneficial to humans, because we would have a sort of hypothesis for bringing about peace and resolving conflicts. So I think it's a worthy thing to think about and be really creative in brainstorming what are these interventions from a sort of relational behavioral perspective that could bring about peace. And actually, our closest ape relatives do give us insight in this regard, because bonobos, who are tied as our closest living relative along with chimpanzees, they have peaceful relationships between groups, and they don't exhibit the lethal conflict. So they're different in many ways, but they are able to maintain peaceful relationships and even these apparent friendships across groups. And I don't study bonobos, but from everything I've read, the obvious explanation for this is that in bonobos, it's the females that are in charge. They're the ones that hold the power in the group, whereas in chimpanzees, it's the males. In both species, chimps and bonobos, males stay in the group in which they're born for their entire lives. So they sort of have this xenophobia, this sort of fear of strangers, whereas females at adolescence, they leave the group that they're born in often, and they join another group. So they have a completely different conception of outsiders, of strangers. So it makes sense in a bonobo group, if females are the ones in power, they have a different perspective on in-group and out-group than a male bonobo and certainly than a male chimp. So there's something there, I think, with you know, male power versus female power in the group. How could maybe sort of facilitate females to be making more decisions in chimpanzees? In some chimpanzee groups, females are in more powerful positions. I mean, there's many ways to think about power. Even it's not all about the dominance hierarchy. There's hierarchies of sort of prestige and mentorship, and chimpanzee females are extremely important in many aspects of life. Like mothers are just so important. They're shaping a lot of the behavior, the relationships, the culture of a group. They do also participate in these territorial patrols, sometimes in the lethal attacks. They also, we've witnessed several cases of females making these almost heroic acts to try to, and sometimes succeed in saving chimps that are being attacked. So there's, again, so much more research that needs to be done. This is sort of the research on the split and the lethal conflict is just the beginning to really understand chimpanzees at a deeper level. And through this, I think, gain a deeper understanding of our own lives.
Yes, indeed. And a cynic might say that humans have still got a lot to learn about how to resolve conflicts amongst their own groups anyway. So more work to be done on several fronts. Aaron Sandell, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you.
And Aaron is the lead author of the research article in the journal Science, Lethal Conflict After Group Fission in Wild Chimpanzees. Aaron's also associate professor at the Department of Anthropology at the University of Texas at Austin and co-director of the Ingogo Chimpanzee Project.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.